You're listening to Knowledge at Wharton on Business Radio. Here again is Dan Loney.
Hour number two of Knowledge at Wharton here on Sirius XM 132, Business Radio powered by the Wharton School. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. It is the 1st of October, starting out the new month, starting out the new week. Great having you joining us wherever you are listening around the United States or up into Canada. Coming up in just a minute, Europe's reform around copyright could help to bring some significant change potentially around the world, especially involving the world of music and video as well. We'll discuss what changes were made and could we see something deeper here in the United States in this realm. And then in our final 30, to add to Facebook's recent problems, it was just announced last Friday that their services had been breached and that information of some 50 million users has leaked out. We'll look at how Facebook handles this latest crisis coming up at 11:30 Eastern Time. All of that in hour number two of our show, and the way for you to join in is either by phone at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you can't get to your phone, you can send us a comment on Twitter, at BizRadio132, or my Twitter account, which is at Dan Loney, L-O-N-E-Y-21. First, though, our number of the day, and our number of the day today is 80,000, playing off of the topic that we talked about at the top of the show. Tesla has come out with their numbers of auto production for the third quarter of the year, and they say they registered a record 80,000 vehicles produced in the third quarter of the year. Of that 80,000 number, we figured Model 3 sedans was going to be an important number. It was 53,000 Model 3s produced during the quarter, which is right in line with their estimates of 50 to 50,000. Model 3, that mid-size electric sedan. CEO Elon Musk has repeatedly said that he expects the company to be profitable in the third quarter. So we will keep an eye on what happens with that. But nonetheless, according to Tesla, a record 80,000 vehicles made in the last quarter, 53,000 of them, the Model 3 sedan. Last week, the European Parliament approved sweeping changes to digital copyright law that champions content creators over social media and internet giants like Facebook, Google, and YouTube, and others. The directive on copyright aims to allow artists, authors, and journalists, among others, fair pay for their intellectual property. But elements of the law have been criticized as being either a link tax or a meme ban. Although the law passed Parliament, it isn't done yet. It still has to go through some changes and faces another vote in the new year. With more on these new rules, we are joined here in studio by Polk Wagner, professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. And joining us on the phone is Martin Kretschmer, who's an intellectual property law professor at the University of Glasgow, and he is also director of the Create Center there. Polk, great seeing you. Thanks for coming
great
over.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Martin, great to have you joining us today. Good morning. Let's get into the changes exactly, Martin, that are occurring overseas and how you think they will impact the people in Europe.
Well, the original proposal is really a harmonizing directive. So it aims to create a digital single market across the European Union. And as part of that process, there's also a change to the liability regime for internet platforms. And that regime up to now worked quite similar to the U.S. regime. There's a safe harbor. So if platforms do not know what is uploaded to their what they host, they are not liable if they remove the material once they are notified. So the new proposal aims to change that.
What's been your reaction, Polk?
So I think that this is a potentially very significant change to the way that we have conceived of copyright law online, particularly in the United States. Yeah. So in the U.S., we have, at least for the last 20 years or so, had this basic principle that by and large, the large internet companies, the YouTubes and the Googles and things like that, are not liable when their users upload something copyrightable.
Right.
However, they are liable if once they know about that copyrightability, they don't do something about it, right? So this basically creates a system whereby they don't have to pre-screen, but instead what they do is they screen once there's been some sort of challenge to the copyrightability. Now, what the Europeans, as I understand it, are proposing to do is essentially flip that to some degree and, in fact, require internet companies, although I understand, and Martin may be able to clarify this a little more, that there are some exceptions for really, really small companies. But by and large, it would change the presumption and make it so that these internet companies, if you were hosting a website or a blog or a YouTube channel or anything like that, you would have to pre-screen. You would be liable if your users uploaded something that was copyrightable. And that strikes me as a pretty important change. That has the potential to really create ripple effects about the way business is done in terms of these internet giants, as well as people who, how you interact with the internet.
Martin?
Yeah, it's not quite as radical as my colleague is presenting it. It's true that it flips the liability, but it flips the liability only for quite specific services. In the European political context, really, it's tailored at YouTube, and it fits into this kind of global politics that the platforms are seen as American multinationals which take over European culture. So it's true, therefore, that it's a significant change, but it's really targeted at something quite specific, which is really YouTube and to a certain degree Facebook. And so there's a new category being created. It's called online content sharing service providers. So this is not all platforms. It's those who share significant amounts of copyright protected works and optimize this and promote those contents for profit-making purposes. So this is still, it catches a number of companies, but then there's a whole new list of companies have been added which are not covered. And so these are micro enterprises, but it's also services such as GitHub or Dropbox or eBay. So it's a long list of encyclopedias like Wikipedia. So there's a long list of services which are not covered by this new provision. And that's really, these are modifications which have been made in response to interventions prior to the vote.
So Martin, let me ask you this. Is your sense that this change is more a rebalancing of copyright law, which is sort of the content creators feeling like they want more compensation for their work, or is it more of a European Union effort to rein in sort of the power that the large, particularly American internet content platforms have? Which one of those do you think is playing more of a role here? Because, in the U.S., we do have a lot of debates about the former, right? Whether or not artists and newspapers and content creators are being sufficiently paid, but not much about the latter. We don't seem to, at least in the U.S., care all that much about the increasing power of these platforms.
I think you're right that the political context really is the latter. And I think that explains why the vote went through. The concerns of artists are significant, but they always have been in copyright lobbying. It's always been used as this story. The starving artist is a favored story to change copyright law, which then essentially benefits through contractual arrangements the investors in copyright. And in the European context, really, the lobby was both the newspaper publishers for a separate press publishers' rights and I assume the music industry, and specifically the sound recording industry, who want to get more money out of YouTube, essentially. So the narrative of the starving creators certainly featured, but in pretty much the same way as it always does in copyright reform.
But Martin, I would think that if you're talking about posting something that is copyrighted to Facebook, let's just use that as an example, there is probably a fairly good chance that whoever posts that copyrighted piece on their Facebook account, that somebody else or several people are going to share that and repost it on their own sites. So it's almost like a spider web effect of the impact of posting this one thing, yet it ends up being posted by 20, 30, 50, 100 people elsewhere in a next month or 2 months or whatever that time frame is.
I think that's entirely right, but the measures are targeted at services who optimize and promote for profit-making purposes. So
right.
I assume if a block takes it over, that they would not necessarily be covered by this new law.
So your view is it's really not. So if I was, for example, in Europe or even in the U.S., as it turns out, starting an online magazine where I was taking submissions or having open access submissions, a site like Medium, for example, or something like that, is your sense that the new copyright law in Europe would alter what I would have to do? Would I have to perform more screening of my users' submissions? Would I have to tell my users something differently than I'm telling them now? Or do you think that there are enough exceptions with enough breadth that really we're only talking about the Facebooks and the YouTubes of the world that are going to have to adjust their activities?
Well, there's a large amount of uncertainty. If you have adverts on your site, you may make profit, and then it's possible that you suddenly end up there. You still may be carved out as a small or medium-sized company, but there's a lot of uncertainty. So that uncertainty will probably lead to a certain amount of risk-averse behavior.
Right. So that is one of the concerns that I think I would have as a policy analyst about this is that does this create a set of new incentives surrounding copyright that has the effect of diminishing both the incentive to create new and interesting content sharing platforms, the incentive to try to create platforms that can make money, or ultimately to the users, the disincentive to even share if there's potentially more ability to be held liable. So in the U.S., I think we have believed, and it's certainly not been without controversy, but I think we have believed that our law, which creates what we generally term a safe harbor for internet service providers, those people who make these platforms, are generally immune from copyright liability unless and until they actually have knowledge of the copyright infringement. We generally think that has created strong incentives to build these platforms and to create more sharing, and has resulted in the sort of internet ecosystem that we see today with lots of sharing and lots of different kinds of business models. I guess a concern that I would have is whether or not the changes in Europe are going to alter that dynamic in a way that could diminish those incentives.
Yeah, I entirely agree. It could have the perverse effect that the incumbents, Google and Facebook, can live with this new law, but it will be much harder for new entries, for innovators to enter this market. Because they haven't got the filtering technology, it's too expensive, they're risk-averse, investors might not put the money in, and so it may have the perverse effect that even, that it inhibits European innovation.
844-942-7866 is the number if you would like to join in and have a comment or ask a question. We're joined in studio by Polk Wagner of the University of Pennsylvania Law School, and on the phone, Martin Kretschmer from the University of Glasgow. 844-942-7866. Or if you'd like, send us a comment on Twitter at BizRadio132. Martin, it's interesting. We have talked quite a bit in the last few months about the Brexit, and there's obviously the conversation surrounding the single market with the Brexit negotiations. There's also, I guess, this belief of the digital single market and how important that is going to be for so many people moving forward in Europe, correct?
That's entirely correct. And the current UK government proposal for Brexit is that they would not be part of the digital single market. So it would have an effect. On the other hand, much of intellectual property law will have to remain quite similar to the neighboring countries. I mean, we still don't know what the final deal
correct.
Will be.
It
could well be that not much changes, and we have an arrangement like Norway has, you know, with pretty much a single market still in place. But the current proposal of the UK government is to remove the UK out of the digital single market, yes.
And every country in the EU outside of the UK has to ratify this independently once we get it to that point, correct?
No, that's not correct.
Oh,
so, the European lawmaking process is a majority driven. So the Council of the EU, in which all the member state governments sit, they have to approve it, and Parliament does have to approve it. So we have now, in the moment, two different texts, but they are quite similar. So we've got the parliamentary text, and we've got the Council of the EU text. And over the next 3 months, they will try to agree a common text, which then will have to be approved both by the Council, which is the member state governments, and the Parliament.
Okay.
And that can happen by a majority. There's a very complicated rules what the majority has to look like on the Council. But once it's approved, then every member state has to translate it into their domestic law, but they don't have freedom about it. They have to do it, and if they don't do it, then there are enforcement proceedings.
Right. They get some. They have to basically have some sort of implementing legislation, but they are constrained as to how much they can
That's
change
correct.
It, right? So one of the other things I saw being reported about these the proposed changes was a shift or an expansion in the definition of what copyright infringement might be with respect to sharing either links or small snippets of information. So, by way of context, in the U.S., we generally believe that if you post something quite short that doesn't have a lot of what the copyright law would describe as artistic expression embedded in it, you're more or less immune from copyright infringement, even if you lifted that from somebody's earlier copyrightable work. My understanding from some of the reporting that I've seen on this new European law is that this would expand some of the definitions of what might count as copyright infringement in ways that people are concerned would diminish the ability for people to do things like post snippets of song lyrics or maybe memes where they've used somebody's photo and superimposed funny text on it or something like that. Do you think this is what some in the press have described as a meme killer?
Yeah, there are two distinct provisions. So the meme killer is still within Article 30, and that's what we just talked about. Once platforms implement filters, they will identify material as potentially infringing and won't make the assessment whether it falls within an exception, whether it's fair use, for example, in the US. So that's the one provision which is very controversial. The other one is Article 11, which creates an entirely new right for press publishers. And that's the one which I think you refer to with this, with short extracts and snippets.
Yeah.
And the idea here is to create a new exclusive right which improves the bargaining position of press publishers, media publishers, vis-a-vis, again, Google and Facebook, companies which have news aggregation services or repurpose press content in an online format. So the idea was there to create a new exclusive right that for the use, the online use of press materials, one would have then to acquire a license. This is quite a radical change in many ways, because news itself and facts should not be protected by copyright law, and hyperlinks itself are not protected either by copyright law. So the proposal is now that you still can hyperlink and you can still have single words, but once you do a snippet, a contextual explanation with the link, then you would fall within this new exclusive right.
Paul, so that's go ahead.
Guys, you say Paul. So with this move going on in Europe, how potentially does this, I mean, obviously companies like Facebook and Google and such, they are multinationals. They are now in kind of a world where they are having to deal with, through GDPR, a one set of rules in Europe and one set of rules in the United States. How then would this copyright then potentially impact the Facebooks and the Googles of the world? Because of the fact that you have, to a degree, different standards.
Sure. So I think that a lot of this depends, of course, on the details of what ultimately happens. As Martin has said a couple of times, this is not final. We don't really know yet exactly what the final provisions are going to be.
Right.
But I do think that, you know, for the Googles and Facebooks of the world, this is not much of a problem. I mean, for example, YouTube is already engaging in quite a bit of pre-screening, right? So yeah. To the extent that the new rules in Europe say you have to pre-screen for copyrighted material, YouTube already has a similar system. Whether it actually meets all of the standards, we don't know yet, but the technology certainly exists. Facebook has similar sorts of things. So I don't anticipate them having much trouble. One of the interesting things, there's a couple of interesting things too, which is how do the smaller companies deal with this, right?
Yeah.
So a company that doesn't have the resources, and Martin mentioned this earlier, to immediately turn on some sort of filtering technology, or doesn't have the resources to sort of cabin off different constituencies, right? So you could imagine having different rules for your American users versus your European users and so forth, but that costs money too. That takes time. It's not perfect. You expose yourself to liability. You know, the lesson of the GDPR is interesting here too, because that went into place. There was a lot of concern that this was going to sort of dramatically change the way that we interact with the internet. And at least for the U.S. companies, it didn't really change very much. In fact, mostly what they did was made us re-consent to some sort of new privacy law provisions.
Right.
There were some best practices that went into place, and it was mainly a headache for the smaller and medium-sized businesses. So that's one thing that I think we don't really know yet, is that, you know, how are the smaller businesses going to deal with it? The other interesting thing that's going on here is that, you know, I think that this idea that the European Union is increasingly trying to create a single digital common market, right, to create and sort of expand the role of the European Union in copyright law to differentiate themselves, in particular from the U.S. copyright law, really has important implications for the way that we think about online interactivity and copyright going forward. So if it does stick, for example, some of these more radical changes that Martin was noting earlier in terms of new copyrights for news publishers, for snippets or hyperlinks or something like that, it may well be that those things spread, right? That practice of seeking a license, of getting either payment or some sort of compensation to a news publisher for using their content, even in fairly minimal ways, if that spreads from Europe into the U.S., that could really change the way that the underlying news business is operating. And so, but we don't know yet whether the predominant rules in the U.S., which are that you basically don't have that right, or in the European Union are going to work. And I think that's one of the things that's most interesting about this, is that, you know, by Europe putting together this single common market, this digital common market, they're going to be more of a competitor to the United States in terms of which rules are going to be followed.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that plays out.
Martin, it's interesting because, you know, there are certain issues which it has been tougher for the countries within the European Union to come together on. Currency seemingly is an issue that pops up there a lot. This and the issues surrounding GDPR, seemingly it feels like you have a great opportunity to be able to bring all of the countries of the European Union together because of the impact on every country, on people in every country. There is a commonality about wanting to handle this type of a problem.
Well, for the GDPR, it's certainly true that the approach is to export European jurisdiction. Whether that's for the copyright law possible in the same way, I think it's not so clear. I think content providers can target much more precisely, while data processing is a tricky one to restrict to one jurisdiction. But as Polk said, certainly through trade agreements or just because it's in the world as an alternative approach, it may have a much bigger effect than the provisions we just outlined. So if you flip the liability rules, just that you would be able to do that, that may have a global effect, even if the effect within Europe may be quite limited at this particular time. And it's quite curious that YouTube probably quite soon would have been liable under existing copyright law anyway. So it's quite clear that they already monitor to a degree that they can shape what they offer to each individual user. So they already interfere in a quite active way in the process of presenting content to us. So they act more like a media company than a platform. And there are cases before the European Court of Justice which sooner or later would have found them liable at least for part of their service. So that would have come anyway. So therefore, a very interesting question is why at this particular time this change of liability is needed. And I think there is this symbolic quality to it, the symbolic quality of regulating American platforms in the European context certainly is an aspect of that.
And it's interesting how Martin just phrased that, because he mentioned about Facebook and being a media platform. That's obviously been a huge conversation point here in the United States, Polk, over the last couple of years, about whether or not Facebook is a social media company or if they truly are a media company at this point.
Exactly. And that I think is a conversation we're going to continue to have, particularly because the way that they interact with regulations continues to evolve more and more all the time, both in terms of copyright and content, as well as privacy, as security, all of these things. We're going to see big shifts in, I think, how we think about and how we regulate these online content providers. I think it is interesting, and it's worth thinking about, if the YouTubes of the world were already liable under sort of general copyright law for what they're doing in Europe, as Martin suggested, what's the need for the new regime? And it may be that there is an increasingly strong sense that large American media companies, that these major platforms are growing so quickly in strength. They're sort of swallowing up so many competitors. They're becoming more and more difficult to regulate, to even figure out what they're doing, that there's going to be more impetus to regulate them. And I think in that sense, the European Union, we've long seen the Europeans being much more interested in stepping forward in terms of regulation than the American regulators.
The time frame again, Martin, on this, it will be sometime, early next year, where there will be a final vote on this?
It's hard to predict, but there are parliamentary elections, I believe, in May. So it has to be really, a text needs to be agreed by January. So I think there's a window of very few months, and then it will go to a vote. I mean, there's still a theoretical chance that it will be blocked in the final vote, but I don't believe that will be the case, because the text we have in front of us, the Council text and the European Parliament text, are so close to each other that it would be a surprise if it wouldn't go through.
Martin, thanks very much for joining us today. Thank you, sir.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Polk, great seeing you.
Great to see you. Thanks
for coming over. Polk Wagner from here at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Martin Kretschmer from the University of Glasgow. We'll take a break. Final 30 coming up in just a minute. We will talk about Friday's breach at Facebook. 50 million users impacted by this. It's just the latest in a string of events that has really impacted Facebook. We'll get into that in just a minute. Sirius XM 132 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School.